Hello, everyone, and welcome into episode 77 of the Stomp the Bus Show. I'm your host, Mark Harris, and we have a great episode for you all. Colton is joining me, and we're first going to start talking about the Final Four, a Final Four that ASU is not playing in, but they are hosting, and there are actually a ton of ASU connections in the Final Four. So going to start out with that. Colton, how's it been, man?
Oh, I'm doing great, Mark. As promised, this is my 80-pound weight loss. Last week, you couldn't really see me, so figured I'd get ahead of that as soon as I could, right? But great to be back and great to actually be on the camera this time, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of crazy that the Final Four, I mean, obviously ASU is the host college, which is just so ironic given how this season went and just all of our frustrations about the lack of investment into the program, and they're the one who's hosting it. But what kind of adds an interesting twist to it is that three of the four teams in the Final Four have a direct connection to either ASU or Bobby Hurley.
Did we find any connection on Purdue, or is that the only one?
I don't know. I don't. If there is,
we couldn't get. We couldn't get our interns to dig into that at all.
No interns. Yeah. Did we recruit Zach Edey at one point? I don't think we did. So.
No, maybe one of the coaches. Hurley was one of the coaches who overlooked him.
Yeah. Although, okay, I will say this. He was like a three-star recruit. So I can actually buy that some coaches overlooked him, even though.
I will say this about Edey. When I watch him, and granted, I know just as much about basketball as many in terms of, like, is somebody talented or not. But from just the having never played eye test, right? So that I'm sure this opinion is very valid to many people. He doesn't strike me as a guy who is 7'3" and talented, right? He strikes me as a guy who's 7'3" with 6'4" guys on him all game, right? And, you know, this dude is shooting. I think he had one foul against him in the last – when they reached the last 5 minutes of the Tennessee game. One foul against him, and he had shot 23 free throws. So, credit to him, right? They're in the Final Four. He puts up monster numbers. But I feel like there's – I don't know. I feel like he's just one of those guys who's in a system that absolutely exploits the fact that he's just so much bigger than everybody else. So if that works, that works. And, I mean, obviously he's putting up numbers, but when I'm watching him, I'm not just – I'm not thinking like, wow, this is the most talented guy I've ever seen. I'm thinking like, okay, this is the perfect system for a guy like this to sort of feature this skill set. So I don't know if it's like, right, like calling out all the coaches who pass on you. I get it. It's a trendy thing to do. I remember everybody picked in front of me. But it's like, I don't know. It's kind of a fair assessment of him. Like Purdue wanted to build a system around him and feature him as their offense, their go-to guy. And it worked out. So credit to them, credit to Edey. But it's like, it's not like drafting Jamarcus Russell first overall, right? And I don't know. It seems like it's one of those things that worked out for Purdue and it's worked out for everybody else too. Like, I don't know. That was just kind of a rant about Edey, but just watching him this whole tournament and like, nothing about him really stands out to me as, like, exceptional. He's just so much bigger than everybody.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, he's just so much bigger than everybody else, and he has such a light whistle, right?
Yeah, I'll say, like, for one, he is one of the most, like, unique NBA prospects to come out in recent years because the production is there. This year, the winning is there. We have to remember, like, for all the complaints about the whistle this year and – they're like, some of them are pretty warranted. Let's be real. They did lose to a 16 seed last year. So like, he's clearly not invincible. I do think he's going to be like, a solid NBA player. I feel like he's good enough to be in the NBA, but you can see like, yeah, he's not going to be like a dynamic NBA player, but
I don't know how far he'll go in the NBA, truthfully. I see that he's shooting up to like lottery range after this tournament run.
Yeah, I've seen mock drafts have him in like the back end of the lottery and some that have him in the second round. So like,
yeah, I think because of the last couple of games, maybe recency bias, whatever it is, the last couple sort of, I guess, mocks that I've seen have him in like the 10 to 20 range almost, which is probably his peak, right? That's the highest that he's been throughout any.
He's a senior. Like if he were
Which also probably hurts him a little bit because NBA GMs typically go pretty young, right?
Right.
They're drafting young dudes who can sort of grow on the job a little bit. Edie, how much more growing does Edie have to do? He kind of is what he is. And I think what he is a very dominant college player because he's so much bigger than everybody else. I think how many other 7-footers do you see in college basketball? You know what I'm saying?
There's more than you think.
How many other 7-footers is he playing against?
I mean, I don't know. I haven't looked, but I mean,
no, I know. It's a hypothetical, Mark. It's you don't have to.
He's played against other 7-footers before. I think it's a little disrespectful to be like, oh, anyone could do it. Like, there's
I'm
a
not
reason
saying anybody can. Yeah. I'm just saying in the NBA, the guys that he will be going against in the NBA are far more dynamic than any of the 6'7" guys who have had to guard him in this tournament run. So I think what I'm trying to say is the NBA ceiling for me is like, I don't know, maybe he's a backup center who comes in for like rim protection at some point, right? Which is like, I don't know, maybe teams need that, but it kind of seems like as the NBA has shifted to more dynamic fives and dynamic big men who can run the floor and maybe handle the ball a little bit, I don't know if he's really that guy. You know what I'm saying?
No, I think you hit it on the head with backup center, like rim protection. Like, you know, like,
and I mean, if he has a long career, he has a long career. Yeah. You could be absolutely right.
Well, and Alex Len is still in the NBA. Like, think of how long like Nazi Muhammad played in the NBA, you know, like, and like he's 7'4". Like if you're a guard driving down the lane, even if he's not the like most fleet on his feet, like he's still 7'4" and can put his arms up, you know, like, so anyway,
that's going to be his asset for sure. I think that'll be the biggest asset and the most appealing part of having him in your rotation. I don't know. I guess it just depends on what an NBA team values. He's probably never going to be the athletic five who can run the floor, play on both sides, and how much is a team willing to sacrifice when he's playing, right? But, I mean, hey, man, if he has a long career and he's getting multiple contracts, then it worked out for him. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll see, man. Like I said, this was my very limited basketball
NBA draft scout Colton Dodge.
Right.
Grinding the tape.
The very uninformed eye test, I would say. Not my favorite guy to watch. I'll just come out and say it, man.
Pleasing at all.
No, it's not even about that. It's just watching that Tennessee game. I'm like, what? It's so obviously like Purdue. They have the shooters, though. Give credit to the rest of that roster. Right, they have guys that it's built around
enough. Yeah,
100%. It's built
just
around
just enough.
Exactly. They'll kick to Edie. Who's the point guard who had like 15 assists in the Tennessee game? I can't remember his name.
Well, there's one guy named Braden Smith and one guy named Fletcher Blair.
Braden Smith is the guy I was thinking of, but they have the perfect supporting cast to put around Edie, and I think that stresses the defense out significantly. But I mean, if they didn't have the shooters, and I mean, this is going to be the case for anybody, but if Purdue doesn't have the deadly shooters that they have, it might be a little easier to neutralize Edie. But you can't just key in on Edie all game because they'll kill you from the three-point line, which is why they've made it as far as they have. So I don't know. I guess final point, I'm more impressed by the construction of Purdue this year and what they've sort of built to make Edie as successful as he's been versus like, wow, Edie is revolutionary. Dalton Connect, that dude is
– Dude, he's filthy.
That dude is a monster. I don't care if he lost that Purdue game. What he did in that game, that team was on his back.
No, that Purdue-Tennessee – okay, we're going on a tangent here before we get into it. Like, that Purdue-Tennessee game –
This is what it's all about.
Exactly. That Purdue-Tennessee game was the most, like, stereotypical college basketball game where, like, you just – like, 7 of the 10 guys on the floor just aren't skilled, really. It's, I mean, Tennessee, like – I'm kind of surprised they even made it that far. Like, some of the shots that, like, his supporting cast missed were like, dude, like, you're a D1 basketball player. And then you watch Connect, he's just, like, draining threes. He's keeping them in the game. Like, dude, I think he's going to be, like, I think he's going to be pretty solid in the NBA. Like,
he's a three-level guy for sure. He can slash. He has a nice little mid-range game. He can obviously shoot the three.
He's just smooth.
Very smooth.
Athletic. Like, he's not, like, your typical white guy shooter. Like, he's
very polished for sure. He's fun to watch. My favorite part about that game was the graphic they kept running where Edie and Connect had the same number of points for their teams, and it was like every other member of the team had the same number of points too. And that didn't change until maybe the last 4 minutes of the game when Edie kind of took over a little bit at the free throw line. But, I mean, Connect, that dude's a monster. He did all he could. He couldn't – there was a few shots he missed there at the end. But, I mean, he's the only reason they were in that game. So, credit to Connect. He's an animal.
Well, speaking of some ASU connections to the final
four. I'm quitting the show. I'm done. That was your worst.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Anyway, Dan Hurley, brother of Bobby Hurley. DJ Horn, former ASU point guard. I had no idea. DJ Horn, obviously ASU point guard, and then or former ASU point guard. And then Nate Oates, who has no ASU connection, but coached under Bobby Hurley at Buffalo a few years ago. And it's interesting because I think each of them have – I think one of them kind of hurts me more as an ASU fan more than the other two. And Colton, I don't think you're going to guess which one it is.
Which of the three hurts you most?
Like, which of the three is like, I wish we had this person, you know? I guess, yeah.
Man, I'm leaning toward Oates.
You got it, dude.
That's what I was thinking because the other ones, I mean, Horn had his run here, but, like, that was kind of just what happens. And then, obviously, Dan, that's out of our control. But I feel like Nate Oates was kind of within our – I don't know if the timelines really lined up, but
– No.
Yeah.
So the reason why it's Nate Oates – well, for one, it's not Dan Hurley just because, for one, obviously he's a great coach. I'm not, like, disputing any of that. But UConn is just a much better basketball program than ASU. Like, if Bobby Hurley were at UConn, I don't think they would be – they wouldn't be as good as they are now, probably. But they would still be good, right? DJ Horn, good player, like, really good player, having a great tournament. Like, if DJ Horn were on this past year's ASU team, what, did they go 18-14 versus 14-18? Like,
I think even that big of a shift.
And, like, DJ Horn's a really good player. It's also, I saw on Twitter from Chris Cartman of Sun Devil Source that Horn didn't leave because of NIL. He, like, Warren Washington and Devin Cadebridge, like, they left because of NIL. Understandably, and, you know, no fault to them on that. Horn is literally from Raleigh, right, which is where NC State is. And another thing we have to remember about NC State is, like, they're making a very ASU-esque run to the Final Four. They went, like, I think their final record, like, they had 14 losses in the regular season. They literally, the only way they were getting in the tournament is if they won the ACC tournament, which they did. Like, that's awesome. But that's, like, a very, like, ASU way to get in the tournament. Like, as ASU fans over the years, be like, well, if we win the Pac-12 tournament, we could get in. and then we never do. But like, and they were also down at half to a Louisville team that was worse than the ASU team of last year in the first round of the ACC tournament. So like,
and then, I mean, in the championship with Virginia, if that dude on that free throw, they're not even in the
tournament. Yeah, that's one of the craziest like sliding doors moment. And like,
yeah,
the guy misses a free throw, and then O'Connell, who was actually at Stanford last year, hits a bank three that like rims. It's just the most ridiculous sequence. So, yeah. And DJ Hort, while we're on the topic of him, because he's been kind of lost in that, like he's been really good for them this year. Obviously, like he's only the second famous DJ on his team because DJ Burns is just the best. He's the best. I love him. I love him. And he's got all the moves, man. He's the soft touch. It's so fun to watch.
He's smooth. It's crazy watching him because you're like, it is the biggest like looks can be deceiving guy because he's so. Like it's finesse to his game, right? It's not like it's bully ball. He's just like you said it. He's smooth. Like you don't expect it. You expect him to be banging on the low post all game, but he's hitting mid range shots. He's dishing like,
oh yeah, dude,
fantastic passes.
I saw a clip from the Nuggets press conference, and Jokic was like, "Yeah, I've been watching this guy. He's good. Like he's fun to watch. You know."
Yeah.
And he's got, like, great vibes, too. Did you see him – there was a clip of him, like, telling the Duke students, like, your season's over. He's dancing out on the floor. I'm like, this guy's awesome.
Yeah, I saw him. I want him – I'm excited to watch him against Edie.
Oh, you dude, that's awesome. No, I'm definitely rooting for NC State in this tournament.
Yeah.
Because NC State is the most ASU-like school of all of these. For one, they're not in one of the big two conferences either. So,
my biggest parallel – I think my biggest parallel, and it was the most obvious parallel, was the UCLA run from what, 3 or 4 years ago.
And there was the Oregon State run was kind of like that too.
Yeah, another 11 seed, get to the Final Four, all of that. But, every year when you're like it's bracket season and you're trying to predict, like you have all of the arcs, right? You're like, okay, so they're – there could be a 15 who goes on a run. That's happened before, actually multiple times, right?
Yeah.
The 11 has gone to the Final Four. Could that be the scenario this year? And you're always trying to, like, pinpoint it. And I have never done it before, but I was – NC State being the next UCLA wasn't really – you know, I liked them as, like, a hot team. I was like, they're probably going to get to the Sweet 16. Final Four was not something I thought would happen. So credit to them. I may or may not have thrown 5 on them to win the whole thing at plus 1600.
Hey,
so
worth it. UConn is just so like,
I hope if they beat Purdue, I might be able to cash it out. So we'll see.
There you go.
Yeah.
And while we finish up on Horn, he spoke today with a quote that said, "Coach Hurley was a big stepping stone in my journey. He definitely helped me open opportunities that I didn't think I would have gotten if I didn't go to Arizona State." Because remember, DJ Horn was at Illinois State before he was at ASU. So I don't think DJ Horn and like Hurley have a bad relationship or anything. Like there's been stories of like Hurley texting Horn, stuff like that. And so like, anyway, to just kind of tying together this whole conversation of like, Dan Hurley, like, he's at UConn, and obviously he's, like, ramped them up to a historic level. I mean, holy crap. That team is insane.
What they did against Illinois.
Insane!
Is mind-blowing. A 30-0 run to open the second half. Yeah. And Illinois is playing well.
They were top 10 team.
They're in that game.
Yeah.
So I remember the live spread being 11.5, and I'm like, I don't know, man. And 5 minutes later, they're up by 30. So they're one of the most dominant college basketball teams I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, especially in like the modern era. Like you can't compare them to like the UCLA teams of John Wooden era or anything like that. But like, I mean, the thing that's – I mean, they're just
like – last year too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But they're even more – like they're even I wrote a – for my job, I wrote an article like picking them just to cover because they're only 12-point favorites, which I – maybe it's a dummy pick, but like
no, I. They, that's the
winning thing. Their average margin of victory in this tournament is 27.8 points per game, which is they beat the 16 team by 40 points. They beat their close win was 17 points over Northwestern, in which they were up by 30 points at one point. They beat San Diego State, who went to the national championship game last year. They won by 30 points and then won by 25 against Illinois on a third. Like, they're just so crisp. Like, the ball just is like, it just moves so quickly. Like, the pass is always, it's like how Jokic, like, his passes are like right in the guy's like midsection, you know? It's like, it doesn't just get to the guy, it gets him like in the right spot. And then Klingon, holy crap, man, dude. Like, no one's having the conversation about like, oh, I wonder how he's going to translate to the NBA with him. It's like, he's going to have like a triple double with 10 blocks. Like, it's ridiculous.
No, they're scary. And I mean, that's got to be so tough to like project that line, because on one hand, this is a Final Four game. Alabama
has played well.
Played very well. They got hot at the right time. They've had a great run through this tournament.
They have future pros too. Yeah.
Yeah. So on one hand, it's like, are they really going to get run out of the gym? But it's like, on the other hand, probably UConn is that good.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's a bad pick at all. That might be one I'm tailing, honestly. I keep going overs. Like, I love Bama overs. I went UConn Illinois live over at half at 129.5. And they finished at 129. So that one kind of ripped my heart out and showed it to me. They did the classic coach's son dribbles out the clock. So that's always fun. But I think I'm going spread this time. I won't fall into that trap because the total is like 158. So
it's so tough with their totals because like they can just put up points, but their defense is so good too. That no team has scored 60 points on them in this tournament.
Right. And like after what I saw against Illinois, their ability to just turn a corner and completely run a team off the court has really changed my perspective on that. I'll probably end up going spread. They will probably end up winning this tournament. I would love to see. I think I saw on the hypothetical matchups on FanDuel that they're 3.5 point favorite over Purdue, if that's the matchup, which is kind of absurd. And then they're a 15.5 point favorite against NC State, which that if that
feels about right.
If you get that matchup, that's probably the biggest, like, you know, David and Goliath underdog thing that we've gotten in a long time. So
I would love to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. If NC State is able to get through Purdue, 15.5 is a little disrespectful, but I'm sure that number changes based on what you see in that game. So those are just the hypothetical lines that I saw, 3.5 and 15.5. But yeah, I already told you, man, I'm an NC State fan until the end.
Yeah, man. Well, yeah, so let's wrap, but like, let's bring this back to Oates. So the reason why Oates is kind of those three, the one that got away is because like he's succeeding at Alabama. And I know Alabama, like they definitely have more resources than ASU because they're in the SEC, but so does the rest of their conference, right? And before he was there, like this Alabama is not a basketball school at all. Like it is so secondary to everything there. Like obviously, and like I think this is their first Final Four ever. You know, like NC State has won championships, granted, like 40 years ago, and Purdue's been to the Final Four as well. UConn, obviously, like Alabama is like truly, like he's truly elevated the program, right? And he's clearly just a better like X's and O's coach than Bobby Hurley to this point. And so the way it lined up in terms of timing, like there's no way ASU back in what 2015 was going to be like, okay, yeah, we're not going to hire Bobby Hurley from Buffalo. We're going to hire this assistant coach at Buffalo, Nate Oates, you know, like I'm not blaming like anything on that, but had Nate Oates come to ASU, they would have had a few like really good years that I don't think we would have seen with Hurley, honestly. And he probably, honestly, Nate Oates probably would have left ASU by now. Like, let's be real. But if he had taken us to like a Sweet 16 or something, like, you know, it would have been worth it.
Yeah.
So,
well, looking at Bama's history, you're right. It's been four tournament appearances, never getting out of the second round.
Four tournament appearances all time?
No, sorry. I was going to tell you the dates.
Oh.
So from 2004 to, okay, so if we go back to 2001, 2002, which was the first time Mark Godfrey made the tournament, they made it five times in a row under him. And then from 2004, 2005, they made the tournament four times under three different coaches and never made it out of the second round. Now under Nate Oates, he's been the head coach for five seasons now. And they have made the tournament four out of those 5 years.
Yep.
And made it to the regional semifinal, which would be the Sweet 16. Three out of the four, and now they're in the Final Four. So, yeah, you said it. Just like a complete turnaround, going through three head coaches over that span and only making the tournament four times from 2004 until hiring Oates from when they fired Avery Johnson. But, yeah, it's one of those things where you're absolutely right. Alabama, everybody thinks football, basketball might kind of be secondary. But if you're thinking of secondary at an SEC school, that program might still get even more support than the primary program at ASU. So it's tough to gauge because it's like,
right,
Nate Oates probably still has a ton of support, especially after the success that he's put together to this point. I mean, they were the number one seed last year, right? They got bounced in the 16, but I mean, they were the number one team in the country at one point. So, and I mean, Bobby Hurley has even had success with this team. And I mean, I don't know if we've got into what Danny has said yet, but I think Danny Hurley's right. And I'm glad that, and I'm sure you'll touch on that in a second. I think I'm glad that he's called out ASU on a very public stage when they're the host institution for the Final Four. I'm sure that can't feel good for an administration that has not prioritized athletics at all. So if you want to touch on that, you can.
Yeah. So one final thought on like the Nate Oates, Alabama ASU stuff. Like,
yeah,
it's not an apples to apples comparison because like Alabama, I think you just listing all their tournament appearances over the 21st century, like they're clearly just a better program than ASU, but it's not like leaps and bounds better, right? Like,
yeah, no, absolutely.
So like that's why I think that like Nate Oates having gone to ASU is like more like of a realistic type thing. But
100%, yeah, I agree with you. I think their history before Oates is pretty comparable to what we had seen from ASU, right?
I'd say it's better, but not like way better, you know.
Well, yeah, like four tournament appearances in however long, going through three coaches, I think that's pretty similar to what we experienced at ASU too. Like, totally. It's just what we're about to get into with the Danny Hurley stuff. And it's like, how successful can any coach be working under the administration that they have to work under at ASU? Because it's horrendous.
So let me pull up the quote that you're referencing. And no, I love having people from the outside just trash the ASU sports administration, sports mind. Oh, no, not my whole screen. Hold on. Let's do this again. Go. So this is Blake Neiman. He is a Cronkite ASU kid, works for Sun Devil Stores under Chris Cartman. I'll just read the tweet. Bobby Hurley said earlier this week that he's, quote, rolling out the red carpet. He's rolling out, quote, the red carpet treatment here at Arizona State for my brother. Dan Hurley discussed the benefits and potential Bobby has at ASU. Quote, you can see why he loves it here. You can see why he values his job here. I think when he's in a position to have the resources that a lot of us have, or that a lot of us at this Final Four have, when he has that full disposal, he'll be up on the dais. And someday I'll be supporting him. That, first of all, Dan Hurley should be a politician one day because that is some political speak right there. Like getting to the point without being like, hey, Michael Crow, Maybe fix the freaking arena, you jackass. And when it comes to sports, when it comes to sports, I always have to qualify that.
Wow. But, words of mass destruction.
Yeah. But like, it's so clear. It's so clear. And it's, again, like, I love hearing it, but Colton, you said one thing like, oh, the ASU administration can't feel good about having someone say that. I wish that were the case. I wish they wouldn't feel good about it. They don't care.
I don't even know if they'll see that. No. I can't even guarantee that they will. That they will know that that was even said. That's how little they care about sports.
Yeah. Well, and before we kind of end this little segment of the conversation, there's been some interesting athletic director news that we'll get into, rumors is a better way to put it. But it's just it just confirms everything that we've been saying, everything that a lot of local media has been saying. Like, and again, this isn't to excuse like every dumb coaching decision Bobby Hurley has made. Like, there are legitimate, real criticisms of Hurley's like coaching style, you know. But it would be great if he was able to make those mistakes with the full like allotment of resources at his disposal. And so when you have your brother saying, hey, like he doesn't get supported well enough on a national stage, like it should be embarrassing to the university. It should be. But they're probably like, oh, well, did you know that we won the men's swimming national championship and our coach left immediately after? Yeah. Which we'll get into later. But I mean, like, it's just like, it's just so frustrating.
I think the fact that that happened with one of the sports that Michael Crow seems to value, right? With like swim or whatever the sport may be. But in this case, swim, I think that you would hope that something like that happening might be like, huh, why did that happen? I wonder why he wants.
Well, the reason why Bowman, he got double the money. But it's like, but it's like, hey, you know why Texas was able to pay him double the money is because they have way more. I mean, like Texas is always going to have more money than ASU. So it's not like, it's not totally fair. But like, guess what? Texas values the two and honestly, the three key sports in women's basketball, which again, with women's basketball having such a rise these past few years and ASU doesn't care about that either. Like, so that anyway, it's just it is very affirming to hear Dan Hurley be like, yeah, my brother doesn't get supported enough by the university. You know, it's very affirming. And it would be pretty funny if like Hurley kind of told him to say that. I honestly, Bobby probably didn't tell him to say that. But like, it would be pretty funny if he did be like, hey, can you kind of weave this into your press conference on Thursday?
Nah, I'm sure he sees it, man. Like, who can't see it?
Yeah.
Not everybody goes to games at that arena. I'm sure not everybody has been in that arena or, you know, dealt with, seen what Bobby Hurley has had to deal with in terms of the people that are his bosses, right? And now, I guess, his lack thereof, he doesn't even have a boss. He has an interim guy.
There's no AD. No, yeah. It's been so – we're in April. Ray Anderson resigned in, like, sometime in November. I think it was like mid-November. And let's see, December, four whole months. I can't even do the math right now.
It's okay.
It doesn't even matter. Like the fact that it's like 4 or 5 months, it's irrelevant. Like that just shows you how long it's been.
It's one of those things where like that's probably a position you want to fill. That's probably not a vacancy you want to leave for too long, right?
Yeah,
I don't understand.
Well, you would think, but again, we have to do the innovative approach for sports. We can't just do the normal approach that works for other teams because we're Arizona State,
which is integrating Apple TV into your media deal because it's Star Trek technology.
Oh my God. Well, I've got
it. That was the least innovative thing I've heard from somebody who values innovation more than anybody ever has.
And like the thing that's so frustrating about it is like for the most part, like, I know that there's some other non-sports criticisms of Crow, but like, for the most part, he's done a really good job as a school, like, university president. And so that's what kind of makes things so frustrating. Anyway, we have some rumors. This is from, I don't want to call it a report, but this is from Brad Sesmat at Sports 360 AZ, plugged in guy, former Cronkite professor. I don't, maybe he still is, I don't know. But I'm going to share this little blurb in one of his recent stories. And honestly, it's pretty infuriating. I won't lie. It's really infuriating. It kind of just confirms everything we've said. So it's at the bottom of one of his recent three-dot thought story. There's an in-house candidate for the Arizona State Athletic Director job. Don't love that. I heard the ADs who were hired by Arizona and Washington both wanted to get in on the Arizona State vacancy, but didn't get a sniff. Just so we're clear, this job has been open since November 13th, 2023. It's over 140 days now. Promoting from within? Sure, it beats what's presently happening at the Harvard at the West. I'm waiting for the white smoke. Holy, so that is just, so it shows, this is what's frustrating. It shows that the ASU athletic director job is actually kind of desired, right?
Yeah.
If Pat Jun, who was at Wazoo and was like, hey, like, I'm interested in leaving Wazoo for ASU. And they're like, we're good. We're just not going to hire an athletic director. And then the woman from, I think her name's Desiree Reed Francois. She was at Missouri, now at Arizona, also was interested. Again, Washington has like more money than ASU. Arizona does not. Arizona's in the same boat or worse than ASU in terms of financial, like, you know, status. So there's that's so frustrating. And then there's like, oh, by the way, they might try to hire an in-house candidate because what we've been doing in-house has been working so well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely a house you want to dip into. But I don't know, man, that's really annoying. I don't understand. Like, it just kind of defies all logic for me. I'm kind of at a loss. I don't even really know how to categorize this. Like, what is with the lack of urgency to find a quality candidate for this position? Like, yeah. I would love to hear the perspective as to why this has been something that has garnered such little attention from the leadership of this university.
Yeah.
Like what is more important right now? I don't get it. It defies all logic. It defies all logic. There is not one justifiable stance that somebody could make. I don't care how many degrees they have. There is not one justifiable stance somebody could make that would make me understand why there isn't a candidate, why they haven't filled this position yet.
And it's clearly like the fact that the two people who took the Arizona and Washington AD jobs, you know, reportedly, which I trust Brad Sesmat on this.
Yeah.
Like reportedly were interested. That makes it even more frustrating. That makes it so much more frustrating because it's like, oh no, we're just going to hire someone. And the in-house candidate could conceivably do a very good job. Like there's no, like there are no guarantees in anything. So like, that's obviously like, something to consider, but like from a process standpoint, this is completely backwards. And I don't, and like when people sometimes, like I got in some Twitter arguments like a few weeks ago with people, and they're the whole like, oh, Michael Crow's done a good job like with the university. And like, yes, I 100% agree. That doesn't mean he's immune to criticism about the sports stuff. Okay. And the thing is, Michael Crow has said multiple times that sports, the high level sports, the ones that like the relevant team sports that we talk about, that get shown on TV, right? That drive applications to schools. He calls them the front porch of the university. Well, now your front porch of your university has like, you know, decrepit lawn chairs and a wasp nest out there. Like it's, and you're like, oh no, actually this is fine. You don't understand why this is good for the resale value of our house. So
yeah, it's kind of absurd to me. I can't understand what is happening here.
I mean, he thinks we're all stupid.
Like it's that classic dilemma where a guy who tries to be the smartest guy in the room ends up looking like the dumbest guy in the room, and he's the last one to realize it. How do I look less dumb than him? That's hard to do.
Yes.
That's really hard to do.
Yes. Yes. And it's like, I just hate being like having like, yeah, you know, like we just have to wait for him to retire, you know? And like, hopefully, like, we don't know what the next person would do, but like, it's just so like the, like.
Athletics is kind of in the Michael Crow stranglehold right now. We're kind of at his mercy. And what scares me is like, even when he retires, what happens if they promote somebody from within who has
you never know. I mean, it could be the person from within is like, okay, let's do 90% of what we've been doing before, but just completely have a different mindset with athletics.
He doesn't even have to be hands-on with it. He can give the athletic director the free rein to do what they need to do. All he needs to do is support that person in doing it. It seems like he wants to have a hand in doing the least beneficial things for athletics. It almost seems like he's trying to sabotage it. It's like,
that's the thing. Like, yeah. And I know that, like,
somebody of his stature can be making the decisions he's making and not understanding that they are insane decisions, ridiculous decisions.
Yes. Yeah. It's so frustrating. I'm going to mention it again. Like, the fact that people from the outside are interested in this job, it's like you're at a bar and all these hot girls are coming up to you and you're like, no, actually, I'm going to go home and play video games, ladies. I don't want to talk to you. And they're like coming up to you. It's not like you have to go out and talk to them. Like, they're just like coming, you know. Oh my God.
You know that struggle better than anybody, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
But yours is, I'm just going to tweet, thanks for coming up to me, but I've got tweets to send.
Exactly. Hey, yeah. But anyway, there is maybe one little potential shining light in the darkness. So Logan, I want to get his name right. Logan Stanley of the Arizona Republic interviewed UConn athletic director David Benedict. David Benedict's name has come up a few times on this show. He is a Tempe native, the former associate athletic director at ASU. And so clearly someone with Arizona State ties. It says in the article, Benedict's ties to the state extend beyond just himself. His wife, Lisa, was a two-time NCAA champion and four-time All-American gymnast at ASU. His father, Alan, played football at ASU and was a longtime football coach at Tempe High School and Mesa Community College before he got into the athletic administration. I'm not going to go all of the stuff. Talks about NIL, which, oh my gosh, look at that, an athletic director who actually values NIL instead of one who goes on record and says, we're not going to do NIL. Just another long list of obvious mistakes that the ASU athletic department leadership has made in the past three or so years. I'll still never understand that one. But there are two quotes at the bottom that I think are very interesting. Oh my gosh. I hate the Republic's website so much. Piece of crap. Okay. Just blows my mind. Okay. Let's share the screen once again. Okay. So, please. I'm aware that my name has been associated with that opening, Benedict said. I'm 100% focused at UConn. Amazing opportunity to finish winter sports, blah, blah, blah. Sports and history, I'm totally lined up behind. Oh. Screw you, Matt Ishbia. Get off my... Okay. Totally lined up, trying to help them win two championships. Understandable. But I certainly love the Valley. I'm born and raised here. Both of my parents are dual degree earners from ASU. My dad played football there. My wife competed there. So I have a fondness for ASU. I care about the university. but I'm not concerned or thinking about their opening at the moment. Well, that last sentence is obviously a lie. I mean, obviously a lie. There's no way you can just be like, oh yeah, I mean, this is my, you know, the school I grew up rooting for and my wife loves it. My parents went here. My dad played football here. I used to work there, but I'm actually not interested in the electric job. I understand I get why he has to lie. It's a good sign that he is lying there. I would be so happy if we just got David Benedict. He has been the obvious candidate the entire time. Much like Kenny Dillingham was the obvious candidate for football. And it seems like that's working out well. We're going to get into that a little bit later on in the show. But I don't really know that much about David Benedict, but I know that UConn, you know, he hasn't screwed up their basketball programs. And, you know, their men's basketball program, like, it's been really good in the past, but there was a dip there in the late 2010s when they were very irrelevant.
I was just about to say that, man. Yeah. They kind of fell off a little bit after that. That would you say the Kemba Walker run?
No, so the Shabazz Napier 2014.
You're right. Okay.
Kemba Walker was 2011. Yeah.
But I mean, kind of brought them back. Is he the guy who hired Dan?
I would assume so. I don't know for sure, but I don't think Dan Hurley's been there like that long.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if when he took over.
But even if he didn't hire Dan Hurley, he is at least clearly giving him all of the resources he needs. And
March of 2016. He's been there since March of 2016.
So there you go. Made a great hire. And he clearly hasn't gotten in the way of the women's basketball program either. And then he hired Jim Mora for their football program, which, like, UConn football is one of the worst of all the, you know, 135, you know, FBS programs from the SEC to the Conference USA. UConn's probably like bottom three because they're independent. But Jim Mora, like, went 6-6. And, like, that doesn't sound that impressive, but for a school like that, it's actually really impressive. And it shows that he made a good hire. And so, like, it would just make so much sense. And that's why it's probably going to be the in-house AD. Yeah.
So let's just, I'm looking through his bio real quick. We'll just go down. It's sort of.
Of David Benedict.
How well what he has done at UConn fits everything we've been talking about ASU needing or ASU having botched. Right. So. You kind of just talked about it, the football turnaround. In 2022, they went 1-11. In 2021, sorry, they went 1-11. And then in 2022, they made a bowl game. So that's kind of a trajectory that we have tried to, you know, see at ASU, right? And football's on the right track. But the bigger things for me are opening dramatic improvement in the athletic facilities at UConn with the opening of new state-of-the-art homes for baseball, softball, men's and women's ice hockey. There's also an 80,000 square foot renovation and expansion of the former recreation center and areas within the field house. So he's renovating facilities. He's overseeing all of that. And he helped orchestrate their move to the Big East, which is moving conferences is something ASU almost fumbled. It seems like everything that he's done well is what ASU hasn't done so well outside of Mullet Arena, right?
And that, congrats. Anyway.
If we're talking about improving Wells Fargo Arena, he's overseen improving the facilities at UConn. If we're talking about leadership that understands what they need to do, especially in such an uncertain era of college football, right? Or college conferences, football, basketball, whatever it is, he sort of recognized getting UConn into the Big East is what they needed to do at the time that they needed to do it, right?
Yeah.
It's he would be such an incredible candidate, but and he's from here.
Yes.
You know,
he's not only from the Phoenix, like, it's not like he's from Surprise. He's from Tempe. Like, he's, like, literally, you know, it's just, it's right there. All this is right there for ASU.
Especially somebody else who he understands NIL too.
Like, yeah. It's like, oh, you know, let's actually let's hire the, you know, in-house associate AD who has been having to follow the dumb rules that we've put in place for him or her. And, you know, again, like the in-house potential AD could be fine, but I just, I don't know. And
he's great at his job. So,
yeah. So, I mean, hopefully, you know, obviously it would have been great to get Pat Chun. Would have been great to get him because he's done a good job or did a good job at Washington State. But, you know, it's, yeah, it's frustrating. It's really frustrating. Like, there's just no, there's no way around it. And it's why, like, it's why I hate the ASU doomerism, because it's self-inflicted wounds. It's self-inflicted things that are happening. Like, if Syracuse has a bad football program, it makes sense, right? Like, it's a basketball school. They're up in, you know, north, like upstate New York, very like out of the way. All these things, it kind of makes sense. There are like on paper reasons, not with the ASU. That's not the case. And it's just so, I don't know. And this is why it's like, it all comes back to Michael Crow and him just inserting his bad athletic ideas onto the rest of the school. So, and I hope, honestly, I hope that there's a day where we can look back like 5 years from now and be like, man, it really was Michael Crow holding ASU back in a lot of these areas. You know,
yeah.
That would be great. Yeah. I mean, personally, yeah. It would be great because then there's a lot of I told you so's that I'll be dishing out. But although there's not going to be many because most people agree with this. So, like, it's just.
Yeah, most people are united on. I mean, how could you not be united on this front when you don't have an AD?
It's ridiculous.
Like, I don't understand how anybody else could have any other perspective, but I don't think they do. So.
Speaking of which, Greg Byrne, who's the Alabama athletic director, he actually went to Arizona State. One of the kids in Cronkite News tweeted out, thank you, Greg Byrne, for stopping by the Bureau and talking with us. Can't thank Paul Bovin enough for bringing Greg in. And then Jess Chilly, who's a local high school reporter in Arizona, quote tweets it. So ASU actually finally brought an AD on campus.
Yeah. I saw that. Good stuff.
All right. Let's get into some of the nitty gritty before. I mean, we could just go on and on about, Michael Crow's decision making when it comes to sports.
Yeah. We can do a little rapid fire.
Yeah. So we have some transfer portal news. Braylon Green officially gone, going to Bowling Green. So I wish him the best. I think he showed some flashes this year. It does make it a little easier to handle that he's going to the MAC. Like, let's just be real. So good for him. Frankie Collins has narrowed his choices down to 6. And I would say at least it's not like the Blue Bloods that are in the mix. This is from Tipton Edits. The list is ASU, TCU, SMU, San Diego State, Florida, and Cal. So I would say maybe all of those other than Cal are clearly better jobs than ASU, but not like San Diego State is, and then Florida, I would say as well. I'd say TCU and SMU are closer to ASU, and then Cal is in the mix as well. But like seeing those as the 6, it actually makes me think we could get him back, you know?
Yeah.
Not that we will. But I would still say it's unlikely, but it's not like ASU, Kansas, you know, Purdue, and then San Diego State, Florida, and Cal. You know, it's So
it's not less likely than it was last week.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. So we'll see how it works with Frankie. I'd love to have him back. We mentioned men's swimming won the national title, which. I've made a lot of kind of snide comments about like, oh, like the like because it comes from Michael Crow and being like, oh, well, we have all these, you know, in individual sports that are winning and stuff like that. But like, it is really cool to have like a national title under your belt. Like it's pretty awesome to see that. And you know, it kind of got dampened a little bit when Bob Bowman leaves for Texas the next day. But at the same time, like, he did win a national championship, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, I would take like in any other like baseball, football, men's basketball, women's basketball, all of them. If you told me, hey, Coach X is going to win a national championship at your school, and then he's going to leave for another school, I'd be like, fine, I don't care. Just give me the, you know, like, give me the natty. Flags fly forever, you know?
Yeah.
So it does show, I mean, Texas has always had more money than ASU, but it just shows, like, the growing revenue gap between the Big Ten SEC and then Big 12 and ACC, you know? So there's that. ASU baseball. We've had some pretty negative discussions about ASU baseball on this show, and for good reason, because up until, less than a week ago, they were 11-14 overall. But they swept Cal at Phoenix Muni, and then they what was the final score? They hit a two-run walk-off single to beat GCU on Tuesday. Let's find that. I want to get the final score. And of course, well, it doesn't matter. I think they won 9-8. So
they're included on, I can't remember, maybe it's D1 baseball or some college baseball site has them as one of their first four out for the tournament, which is at least they're in the mix. Yeah, currently.
Wow.
Has them as the first four out. Which is like, they're at least they're in the mix. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that is so much better than what I expected. Yeah.
No, they currently have them listed as one of their first four out. I can't remember where I saw that. I know it's on Twitter somewhere if you want to try
probably
to find D1 it.
Probably D1 baseball.
But yeah. So I'm trying to.
Wow. That, yeah. I would not think a team that's 15-14 would be so close to getting in. Yeah, 9-8, they won on Tuesday over GCU.
And I straight, man.
Four straight.
No, they beat UNLV.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. That's right. It is five straight. So they were 10-14 at one point. I saw some people who were like, well, why are we giving up 8 runs to GCU? And like, on one hand, I totally understand that. On the other hand, I'm like, dude, we just got to take these wins. Like, this is not
Also, GCU has been a solid program over the last couple of years. Yeah. Like, I don't know off the top of my head how good they are this year, but typically with those programs, you can't ever take them lightly.
No. It's, especially in college baseball. Like, it's not so there's that. It's good. I mean, that is a awesome development that ASU was like a bubble team for the tournament, because I didn't see that coming. So,
currently. And I mean, currently when they're at 15-14, right? So like going on a little run, I don't know, maybe you put it together at Oregon State, which is tough. That's a great team, but
yeah,
building on this, take a game or two there. Who knows? Anything could happen.
I think, and they're at Oregon State. I mean, that's always going to be tough. I think if you can just win one game, if you can, you'll be 16-16. I'll take that. And then that wouldn't really hurt you that much in terms of the, you know, bubble, I guess. If you're 15-14 now, they're going to have a good respect for Oregon State. So
yeah,
that's really good to see. Really good to see. Speaking of things that are good to see, spring football. I mean, I haven't been out there, but it seems like the roster is just much better than it was last year. Like, and I saw that, you know, there's just, for one, there's more linemen. I don't have a lot of like, you know, high level takes about the ASU like offensive and defensive lines, but particularly the offensive line, like they just added way more guys, big bodies. Like, That's just really good to see from what we saw last year. So that's good. But the thing that's really stuck out to me is we have some dudes at the skill positions, man. Like,
yeah,
we have some dudes. Jordan Tyson, who we all thought would contribute this past year after he was at Colorado in 2022 and was their like their only good receiver. I mean, some of the clips that have come out of him at practice have been excellent. Troy O'Meary has been awesome. But the guy, Raylick Brown, dude.
He's a monster. I've seen some of his clips. He's just so shifty.
Dude.
Such a shifty player. I saw another clip of Cam Scataboo out running routes and cooking guys too. So, like,
yeah, man.
They have a really solid core of, and I mean, that's kind of what we anticipated, right?
Like, yeah.
Before we even saw them on the field, we anticipated the skill positions being something that would end up being an asset for them. And I mean, we'll see how that translates to the regular season, but right now it's spring practice. You said it. Some of these guys are out there living up to the hype, so to speak. And Raylick Brown is definitely one of those guys. I'm excited to see Jordan Tyson too. I know he was somebody we talked quite a bit about coming into last season, and ultimately he was injured, right? That's what it was. It wasn't a transfer thing.
Injury that he suffered at Colorado that like lingered into, he played a little bit last year, but he didn't have like his full athleticism.
Right.
And so it seems like he's kind of got that back.
Yeah. I mean, adding him into the mix with the guys that are already there, I'm looking forward to seeing it regardless of who's under center. I mean, I haven't seen too many reports about Sam Levitt just yet.
It seems like he's been pretty good. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. No, like, so, and it doesn't take a lot of good quarterbacks to hit Raylick Brown in the flat and him, you know, juke out a guy and run, you know, like.
Yeah, it helps to have good skill players for sure.
Yeah. And we haven't mentioned DeCarlos Brooks, who, like, when he was healthy last year, he looked really good. He kind of won us the Wazoo game, right? And then Jake Smith is. You know, it seemed like he's been doing a good job as well. Melquan Stovall. I mean, like, when, like, I feel like when Melquan Stovall, like, got the ball, like, it's not like he was some dynamic athlete, but, like, he still made plays, you know? So, like, yeah, but, I mean, Raylick Brown, that's the guy, like, I'm like, man, like, I cannot wait to see him this year. And I.
Yeah, me neither. He's going to be a monster, man.
Yeah. And I saw Dillingham say that he's, like, 5'8", but he, like, 5'8", 190. And like not 5'8", 175.
Yeah.
5'8", 190. Like that is a load to take down, man. And if he's got the athleticism to match, and it's like, holy God, like it's going to be fun to watch. Like Scataboo, like I'm so excited to see him in the second year here, you know?
Yeah.
And we haven't even mentioned Badger because he's out for the spring, but you know, we've seen him and we know that he's good. So
dude, for sure. It should be a fun season offensively. I think we talked quite a bit last year about like if they're gonna lose games, they're gonna lose games with points on the board. And we saw some of that, right? With like the USC game.
Yeah.
Other games. But as the season progressed, it was kind of like we got more Oregons and we got more Utahs. Hopefully this season that depth and some of the front end talent that they've brought in too helps us avoid more of those like lopsided games.
Yeah.
And when you're in games, you never know what can happen, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I keep looking back at that Colorado game, and if there's no busted coverage, we're probably in overtime against them. So, it all goes back to, you know, as long as you're in games, anything can happen. So these guys should help us stay in games and have the firepower to match some of these teams. So,
well, and the thing is, like, even last year, ASU won 3 games, right? Southern Utah, the win over Wazoo, and then the win over UCLA. They also like their two Pac-12 wins were not like 50-50 games, right? They won those by like 10 points each. They lost three 50-50 games. Mm-hmm. They lost to Colorado. The loss at Cal, that was absolutely a 50-50 game.
Yeah, 100%. Right?
And then at Washington, and I would argue that wasn't a 50-50 game. I would argue ASU like should have won that game and maybe would have won that game if they had enough guys, if they had enough bodies to kick a freaking field goal.
Right. Like, or didn't have to go to their third string guy coming into the
season. That's exactly. Like, yeah.
And so, like, where I'm saying this depth could translate to more wins than I think people are expecting. Yeah. That's kind of how I'm feeling.
Yeah, I can see that. The depth, the just getting some luck in 50-50 games, like honestly, and just having some better injury luck as well.
Yeah.
Like,
but that all comes back to the depth, right?
No, like, I know, but I'm saying like there's a chance that like the depth helps, but what I'm saying is you could also just have good injury luck on top of 100%. That, you know?
100%. Yeah. But I think I'm with you, and I think what helps, sort of, everybody talks about making your own luck. I think part of it is you have to be lucky. Part of it is there has to be some work done on your end. I think that what ASU has done in terms of assembling that depth has helped them construct a situation where they're more apt to be lucky. Right. Yeah. So I can see that luck. And plus, it's just the law of averages, man. They were so unlucky last year. Like, there's no way there's not some, you know, positive regression to the mean.
Yeah,
there you go. So,
no, I know.
I'm with you.
And you mentioned, like, Oregon. There is no Oregon in the Big 12.
Yeah.
You know? And I know, like, there's all, like, Arizona is not going to be as good as they were last year. For one, they just lost a few offensive linemen. I think their guy, like that Jordan Morgan guy, I think he's probably going like the second round offensive lineman. That's not easy to replace. And then they lost a few other guys to Washington as well. They didn't, like, to their credit, they didn't lose as many, you know, players as they could have. But like, so like Arizona's still gonna be tough to beat next year. I'm not saying that, but like, I think it's a lot more likely they're like a 7-5, 8-4 team as opposed to a 10-2 team, you know.
Right.
But
and I mean, looking at this schedule, I remember when we were breaking down this schedule at points last year, it was like, oh, they're playing six top 25 teams in their next seven games. And there were stretches like that were just absurd. I mean, looking at this schedule, there's competitive teams. None of these teams are like pushover teams. But I also don't think you've got a murderer's row of like the gauntlets of college football. You know what I'm saying? Which is to your point, man, is like, not only is the roster getting a little better, not only are they getting healthier, not only are they much deeper than they were last year, but the strength of opponent is sort of regressing a little bit too. The strength of schedule has regressed a little bit too, which, I mean, somebody has to win the Pac-12. I don't think it'll be ASU, but
Big 12,
Big 12. I'm sorry. Somebody has to win the Big 12. I don't know if it'll be ASU this year, but there's a much clearer path to winning it sooner rather than later than there was in the Pac-12. So,
yep. Yeah. No, it's looking good, and you know, like anything can happen. Like it's, you know, it's still ASU, like, but you know, and another thing before we wrap up, like apparently the secondaries looked really good as well. And
that's big, man. The defense was an underrated part of this team last year. I think a lot of times, I mean, we talked about it a ton during the season when, you know, they played teams like Oregon or Utah. And I think when ASU was in games, their defense was lights out. Like the way that they played Michael Penix at Washington,
incredible,
unreal. And so
one of the strangest college football games I've ever seen.
Very weird game for sure.
Yeah. No, but like another reason the defense faltered in November of last year, which to their credit they came to play against UCLA at least, was they just got injured. Like it was just done. And And I mean, like, also, like, that Utah game, like, if you're an ASU defensive guy and you see Jacob Conover out there just looking incapable, like, it really shows you the value of Trenton Bourget, who, like, wasn't even that good. But, like...
But was still more steady, right?
He was steady, right? Like, you could trust him to, like, hit a, whatever, like a stick route or something, you know?
The easy passes, right?
Yeah. It's like, remember in the 2020 NFL season where the Broncos had that guy who was like a receiver in or like a receiver, but he played quarterback in high school or something. And it was just a disaster. Yeah. So it's like, it shows the difference between like competent backup play versus not. So.
Yeah. And I mean, dude, that second, the defense was rock solid last year. I know there's been some subtractions through the transfer portal, especially on, you know, the front seven, and then obviously the secondary too with
Jordan Clark.
Transferring out and some of those other guys. But I mean, the guys that they have brought in are also solid players. So,
well, and like, I think Jordan Clark, I hate talking about players like this, but like, he's a lot more replaceable. Like, he just is. Like, you know, and BJ Green, I think he'll be more missed. I think. Him and possibly Jalen Conyers at times will be more missed. But all the other guys who transferred out were backups for the most part. And like, hey, you know, like that's a good thing about the transfer portal. You know, it's like,
and you know what? A lot of these guys coming back are playing in the same scheme. They don't have to learn a brand new defensive scheme. They're comfortable in this scheme. I mean, obviously the transfers who are going to play meaningful time, they've got to pick it up, but I mean, they're coming into an established scheme that played really solid last year when they were in
game. For most of the year, yeah.
The defense is also looking pretty promising too, and it's like, how much of that sack production and that tackle for loss production last year was the scheme, you know?
Yeah.
Who knows?
No,
there are guys who can step in and replicate some of that progression or some of that production, I mean. But, yeah, man, I mean, good stuff for football. It's weird to have one sport that we can kind of hang our hat on right now. And I feel like that is it currently. Like, football, this football season means a lot to ASU fans because things have been so bad for what feels like an extended period of time, right? Like, we did just get that tournament run last year. That was fun. But it's like, we get little glimpses. This feels like something that could be sustainable. And
yeah.
If we get a solid season next season from this football team, and solid means like...
Just get to a bowl game.
Get to a bowl game. Win six games. And I think ASU fans will be excited about football again, which in an A-list program is not very easy to do. So I've got high hopes, and I hope they don't let me down.
Yeah, and, you know, hopefully the depth just comes into play, you know? So,
yeah.
Well, Colton, thanks for hopping on, man. This was a great show. The next episode we do will be the time, we're part of the College Huddle podcast network. And we'll be officially part of that. The website will have launched by then. So, I might be going on, Colton as well, going on, some different, like Big 12 shows and kind of just talking ASU. So, we'll be retweeting that on the Stomp the Bus podcast Twitter account. So watch for that. We're really excited about that. And it's been fun. You know, I think it's good to end this episode on a positive note with baseball, you know, being a bubble team and ASU football looking like it's really building a foundation. So.
Right. It's good how that worked out, Mark. And props to you for working out that College Huddle thing. You really move in silence, man, but I trust you. I had no idea that was a thing.
Well, the guy who just reached out to me.
No, I know. Don't give me too much credit. I'm totally messing with you. I don't. Yeah. It's all good. But hey, if keep moving in silence, man, I'll just be along for the ride.
Right. Like lasagna, baby. All right. well, thank you for watching. Please like and subscribe on YouTube. Rate and review on your podcast platform of choice. And as always, go Devils.